Welcome to the show, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stay safe and warm out there, everybody. The roads were good for me. Corey Curtis, Braden Gall here. I don't know about you, Corey. The roads were fine for me, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be very, very, very careful driving around, as it is very cold right now, and I'm seeing some mild precipitation out here by the airport, so be very, very careful out there driving. Slow down, give yourself some extra time and some extra space, and ease off the gas and ease off the brake. That's my professional snow driving advice there.
I used a sled dog team.
So as a man from Wisconsin, I feel like I'm qualified to say this to people, even though I lived there for like 3 years. So I want to now discuss, and I'm going to let Adam on the phone lines here get this thing started, because now I want to talk about, we just had a conversation about the guys with head coaching experience. That's always a category in any coaching search for football, is do you want a guy with head coaching experience? Well, the next category of guy we're going to talk about, of candidate, are the up-and-coming coordinators, the up-and-comers that people don't know a ton about, and we're going to get into those candidates, who we like, what we think the best options would be, and maybe get to know these guys a little bit, as Titans fans probably don't know a lot about John DeFilippo, for example, who happens to be the quarterback's coach for the Philadelphia Eagles. But I'm going to let Adam chime in to start us off on this conversation, because, Adam, you're going in a direction that I want to start. And I like it when people call in and agree with us. So, Adam, what's up, man? How are you?
Hey, man. All right. So, I don't know if I'm going in the right direction or not, man. We'll see at the end of this. But I don't really like them being so interested in Vrabel. And the reason for that is because the Texans didn't have the Colts defense before this thing started. They were already good. They had a lot of good pieces. So, I love that, you know, he's a good guy. I've seen him do pressers and stuff. He's a real fun guy to talk to. I know he used to catch, you know, touchdown passes as a linebacker in the Super Bowl, which makes him cool. But who cares that he coached J.J. Watt and that Texans defense and made them look good? They were already good. So if you look at it, the guy from Carolina, who I don't think they're giving a whole lot of attention to, I know he's getting interviewed, but nobody's talking about him, he's probably a more viable candidate. It's just that, yeah, I've never heard his name until the other day. So I don't think Titans fans as a whole are going to be happy unless you get McDaniels or Del Rio or somebody with a big name.
If you bring Del Rio here, the fans will flee.
And Josh McDaniels is not a good football coach, in my opinion. But that's
I think Del Rio would be a sweet pick.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, he's just such a – he's like Jeff Fisher, except a little more
– Never been to the Super Bowl? He's like Jeff Fisher, but he's never been to the Super Bowl.
Adam, let's stick with the Vrabel-Wilkes combination, because you're talking about Steve Wilkes, the defensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers, who will, by all accounts and reports, be interviewed, as well as Mike Vrabel, the defensive coordinator for the Houston Texans. They have both been defensive.
And Matt LaFleur.
So they have both been defensive coordinators for exactly the same amount of time. They both have been defensive coordinators for 1 year. Steve Wilkes is 48 years old. Mike Vrabel, 42 years old. I think what's interesting is they did lose A.J. Boye off that defense, J.J. Watt, and Whitney Mercilus off that defense, and they were the worst defense in the NFL. I don't think people realize the Texans,
Cushing, too.
Texans gave up the most points in the NFL. That's not a good start to the resume for Mike Vrabel. Is it fair to look at those numbers and see what he lost off that defense and give him a bit of a pass? Maybe. Carolina certainly has... Steve Wilkes has a ton of respect in the industry for being a pretty darn good coach. He's also was a defensive backs coach for about 12 years and didn't get a crack at being defensive coordinator until just this year. I don't take that for whatever it means. I don't know what that means, because I don't know enough about. He got hired at Sandy. So real quickly, Steve Wilkes' career, 3 years in Chicago, was fired from that job as the DB's coach, 3 years in San Diego, hired by Ron Rivera, who happened to be the head coach at Carolina, who brought him back in 2012 with him. He was the DB's coach for 3 years, the assistant head coach and DB's coach for 1 year, and then the defensive coordinator in 2017. And by all accounts, a pretty well-respected guy in the locker room. So he is going to get an interview, as is Mike Vrabel. I think what both of them have to bring to the table, if you are going to be a defensive coordinator and John Robinson wants to hire that guy, I think what you have to be is an excellent leader. That's what he said first and foremost.
Leader of men was
leader
first thing
of
out
men
of his mind.
Was the first thing out of his mind, and maximizing the talent on offense. So having, you know, definitive, you know, obvious plans on offense would have to be critical to hiring either one of those two guys. But it would also have to mean that either Steve Wilkes or Mike Vrabel are very clearly great leaders in the locker room if they're going to be the two guys that, that are very viable candidates for John Robinson.
I agree with you that I'm not going to hang Mike Vrabel on the defensive performance of the Texans this year. Unfortunately, that's the only thing as a coordinator you have to go back on. But as you're talking about, and I agree with it, when you're talking about the head coach, you're talking about the guy who's going to run your organization. Does he have the leadership qualities? Does he have the big picture thinking? Does he have the ability to connect with players and get them all to follow? These are the important things. You can talk X's and O's with anybody, and that's, you know, one of the things we haven't talked about is I believe they'll go with a younger guy because John Robinson's a younger guy, and these are the guys that he's been around as he's been in these scouting circles for the last 10, 15 years.
And he overlapped with Mike Vrabel as a player at New England. Do you believe that Mike Vrabel is a New England guy?
Because
to me, there's a difference between a New England player and a guy who made his career coaching with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And he never coached ever at New England under Bill Belichick or with Tom Brady. That I think, you know, that's the reason I have questions about Josh McDaniels, is that the only time he ever found success was with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
I think I could have done that.
Vrabel has never coached in New England. He's never been a part of that,
no,
that organization as a coach. Now, he did coach for Urban Meyer, and he's coached for Bill O'Brien, all sort of cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, but, you know, you talk to Mike Mularkey, who are your biggest influences, Chuck Knoll and Bud Grant. And those are the two head coaches he played for.
Right.
And so a lot of guys take a lot from the guys they played. So do I... I guess you're right. When I think of Mike Vrabel, I think of him as a New England guy, although he's never coached there, and we don't know how much of that is in there. I mean, he certainly has more personality than Bill Belichick.
Like, he's not the, like, when we talk college, it's like, oh, is he a Saban assistant? Is he going to work? And
yeah,
then we add him to the list of Saban assistants, just like we do with Belichick in the NFL, and we go Romeo Crennel, failure, Eric Mangini, failure, Charlie Weiss, failure, and Bill O'Brien, not failure. But you go down the list of all these guys, Josh McDaniels, failure in his one crack at it. He would not qualify as that. He would not go on that list, Mike Vrabel.
Well, and Vrabel and Wilkes both have something in common that you brought up that's important here. They're both defensive coaches. And so they're both going to have to bring something to the table that is a must. They've got to have a game plan on offense for who they're going to hire and how they're going to maximize Marcus Mariota's skill set. And they're going to have to sell that. And as I asked Golic in the last segment, just because they're a defensive guy doesn't mean they can't be successful at it, because Mike Tomlin has certainly been successful at it with Ben Roethlisberger, who's put up ridiculous numbers and won a ton of games. So a defensive head coach can do it, but he's got to have the right pieces in place. And so and that's part of the interviewing process. Who are your coordinators going to be? What type of system do you see yourself running? What are the keys to good quarterback play? You know, those are the questions that are going to have to be answered by these guys.
And the two things, also very similar candidates, Steve Wilkes and Mike Vrabel. By all accounts, Steve Wilkes was second behind Sean McVay for the Rams job. That both guys interview extremely well, that both guys have great presences about them when they interview, that they're very likable.
Vrabel interviewed in Indy and Detroit and was supposedly second on the Colts list.
And was absolutely brilliant in those situations, and that's sort of the same things that people say about Steve Wilkes as well. He's had a lot of people come out and say very positive things about him, whether it's Sean McDermott, whether it's Mike Tomlin. There's been guys that have been... So both of these guys, very, very similar in sort of their career paths, in sort of their... Now, Vrabel is more of a faster rising name. Again, you look at Steve
Wilkes...
It's
the Patriot connection that does it.
And maybe that is. Maybe it's the personality.
It is, but it's the Patriot connection. And I know he wasn't a coach there, but everybody remembers him from the Patriots. And so it makes him a Belichick guy without being a Belichick guy.
And I will say this, again, take it for what it is. I don't know if it means anything or not. I'm not 100% sure. But Steve Wilkes was a defensive backs coach in the NFL for 11 years and didn't get a job. So I don't know if there's a reason for that or not. Again, I have no idea. I'm just reading the bio there and sort of inferring what I can infer from looking at a career path.
I look at Ron Rivera as an elite defensive coach in the National Football League. And so if he trusts him as a defensive coach in the secondary two times and then to take over his defense, he thinks a lot of Steve Wilkes. So from a defensive mind, you know, you have to respect the guy who's been grooming him much of this time.
So that is the same exact conversation we would have about another candidate that supposedly is being reported. Gary Klein of the LA Times reporting that Matt LaFleur, the offensive coordinator for the LA Rams, is going to be interviewed. That's the same exact conversation. Do we trust that Sean McVay is such a brilliant offensive mind that he hires really brilliant offensive minds around him, or is it all Sean McVay's offense, which is the same thing you can ask about Ron Rivera and Steve Wilks. So I want to talk about the offensive guys, because as of right now, the offensive names appear to be Jim Bob Cooter, the offensive coordinator from the Detroit Lions, 33 years old. Matt LaFleur, the offensive coordinator for the Rams, I just mentioned, 38 years old. And John DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach for the Philadelphia Eagles. I will mention Frank Reich in this conversation when we come back, because we're going to do all of this. We're going to get to know these offensive guys next segment on the show. I will mention Frank Reich in this conversation. I do not think he should be on this list. That's just my personal opinion. However, so we'll get to know these guys when we come back. Corey Curtis, News 2. You can follow him, of course, on Twitter at Corey Curtis 2. You can follow me on Twitter at Braden Gall. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Corey Curtis, Braden Gall. The Honky Tonk Hat Trick, brought to you by Bud Light, is back tomorrow night. You can join me from 5 to 6:30 at Tootsie's prior to the Predator Showdown with Arizona. While you're there, register for a pair of tickets to tomorrow night's game. Passes to the Bud Light Zone, all you can eat, all you can drink. And you may also win a VIP hockey experience, which includes dinner for two before the game, tickets to an upcoming game, and a ride on the Zamboni during intermission, which is pretty cool. Be sure to stop by Tootsie's, Rippies, and Honky Tonk Central before every Predators weekday home game for specials on Bud Light. Big win last night, 1-0 against Vegas. UC Saros pitches a shutout. Unfortunately, however, it potentially should be the cost of Ryan Johansson, who, of course, left the game late in the second period with what appeared to be very obvious head injury. So all of Jofa not on the ice for the third period last night. So let's get to know, we're going to get to some Preds talk here in a minute, but let's get to know these offensive names for this coaching search for the Tennessee Titans, because I don't think a lot of people know who these guys are. They see it. They see a name.
Probably shouldn't.
And that may be true. It's our job, right, to know about these guys and maybe educate some people. And we certainly handled the Steve Wilks, Mike Vrabel situation. We talked about those guys. It appears those are the top two defensive names. And frankly, as maximizing was used six times during the press conference from John Robinson about the talent, most obviously this is all about Marcus Mariota and the offense. So what are the names that we think are possibilities that we need to get to know? Well, Jim Bob Cooter, of course, from the state of Tennessee, played at Tennessee. Peyton Manning approved, of course, like USDA. Peyton Manning approved, 33 years old, offensive coordinator for Detroit. Now, he got the job as a quarterback's coach 4 years ago, and sort of in the middle of that first season, gets promoted to offensive coordinator. Matthew Stafford is a 61-62% career passer. In his 3 years with Jim Bob Cooter as his offensive coordinator, he went 67%, 65%, 65%. He had the best three touchdown-to-interception ratios in his career, and oh, by the way, lost Calvin Johnson in the process. So I think the numbers from Jim Bob Cooter and that offense with Matt Stafford, and frankly, I look at those receivers and I kind of go, it's Golden Tate and then what else? I don't know about the tight ends, the receiving core, or the running backs. So I actually think Jim Bob Cooter, from an offensive X's and O's standpoint, it should be absolutely on this list.
And he's a Lincoln County guy. So
yes, there you go.
So, I mean, you know, John Robinson's a Union City guy. Is it important for them to have another local guy in the fold?
I don't think that should be a factor, but it does feel nice, though.
It does feel nice. But you're right. I mean, his offensive background shows that he's worthy of an interview. I think he's worthy of an interview, an investigation. I don't think there's any question about that. I think because of his name and his relationship to Peyton Manning, and also being from Lincoln County here, that we know more about him than we do some of these other guys. DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach at
So are you in favor? See, I think a Vrabel Jim Bob Cooter combination platter I would sign off on that. If Vrabel was the head coach and Jim Bob Cooter was the OC, that's something I think I would sign off on, and I'd be willing to try and see what happens.
I don't know enough about Mike Vrabel at this point. I'm intrigued by Mike Vrabel as a head coach, but I agree he's got to have a strong offensive coordinator.
Yep.
And Jim Bob Cooter has shown he is that. Now,
also, I think he'd be willing to continue to be an OC,
mm-hmm.
whereas some of these guys, I think, wouldn't take the job.
And he was a quarterback, too, which right. I don't think hurts. Now Matt LaFleur is the OC.
Well, before we get to, you mentioned John DeFilippo, because apparently Steve Wilks, the defensive coordinator at Carolina, rumored to be in the job with Arizona as well, wants to bring John DeFilippo with him as an offensive coordinator. So there's a chance that he could be a package deal
and
with John DeFilippo.
And DeFilippo's whole career is as a quarterback's coach. I mean,
pretty much.
There's been a couple of brief stints, I think, as an OC, but he hasn't stuck anywhere longer than a year or two. And that, I don't mean that as a negative, but I mean, he's moved along quarterback coach, quarterback coach, quarterback coach, quarterback coach. Yep. And from what I've been reading, he is a hot young name out there that people are attracted to. But I don't know enough about him.
39 years old, and the phrase that keeps coming up, and I think what makes John DeFilippo a very interesting name, is the personality fit and cultural fit with what John Robinson wants. By all accounts, you read in-depth stuff about John DeFilippo, again, quarterback's coach, who is largely charged with the development of Carson Wentz this year, is that he is a work ethic guy, that he is a workaholic who wants to grind it out, who is an X's and O's guy, who loves offense, which is all sort of, to me, checks all the boxes of what John Robinson wants from the players that he drafts, much less the coaching staff. But yes, he worked with Jamarcus Russell, actually coached Jamarcus in his best season, if there is such a thing. I'm not sure if that's a real thing, but coach Mark Sanchez is a young player under the Rex Ryan years when they went to the AFC Championship game. He then worked for Mike McIntyre, who's the head coach of Colorado at San Jose State, as the quarterback's coach, where he took David Fales from a junior college rank and turned him into an NFL draft pick. He then worked with Carson Palmer and Derek Carr in Oakland, and then turned Josh McCown and the rest of the Browns into a 4,000-yard passing offense the 1 year under Mike Pettine before new ownership came in and fired everybody. So I'm not sure he's had a long enough stint somewhere to truly settle in and for us to learn as what he is.
But there's a pattern of success there.
There is. I don't think he's ready to be a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as an offensive coordinator to a leadership guy, that intrigues me. So if Steve Wilks and or Mike Vrabel is the hire, John DeFilippo as the offensive coordinator to me is a very interesting situation.
And along those lines, Matt LaFleur, the Rams offensive coordinator, he was the OC. I mean, he was the quarterback's coach when Matt Ryan wins MVP. And now he goes to L.A. with the Rams, and Jared Goff goes from, oh, my God, he's a bust, to 4,000 yards. I mean,
yep.
You know, and now Sean, again.
And then look at Atlanta after
he leaves.
Now they
had Kyle Shanahan.
They chose Steve Sarkisian over Matt LaFleur.
Yes.
So Atlanta and Dan Quinn, who I have a lot of respect for, looked at their options and said, we were going to hire Steve Sarkisian over Matt LaFleur. I'm not sure Atlanta fans are happy about that.
Yeah.
A year later, but that is something to consider. And then this, of course, falls into the same category as, you know, is it the head coach or is it the coordinator that's making all this job? Because Sean McVay calls the plays for the LA Rams, and Sean McVay is largely the mad wizard, you know, super genius young wizard boy or whatever for LA. How much of the credit for the turnaround with Jared Goff and the offense is because of Matt LaFleur, or is it because of Sean McVay? That's the same question that you have to ask of Mike Vrabel, and is it the players or is it Vrabel? Same thing with Steve Wilks. Is it Ron Rivera or is it Wilks? Those are the questions you have to ask.
Would you sign off on a Vrabel-Wilks connection with LaFleur then?
I think I am on board with the combo of two of these names. I'm not sure I'm on board with either Vrabel or Wilks without a really high-quality offensive mind hired as part of the deal. And to me, that's because I don't think you're going to get Wilks or Vrabel to be a coordinator. They're not going to take a lateral move, in my opinion. It doesn't make much sense for, if I'm Steve Wilks, why would I leave Carolina defensive coordinator to be the Tennessee Titans defensive coordinator? If I'm Vrabel, why would I leave the Houston Texans DC job to become the Titans DC job? So the only way I feel like you get one of those two guys is if you give them the head coaching spot. I do think the offensive guys are more likely to become OCs because that's still more in their career path. You know,
because LaFleur is not calling the plays.
Right, and Jim Bob Cooter's only 33.
And could be out of a job.
And may not have a job. And John DeFilippo's never been a coordinator. So I think it makes more sense to go DC head coach and then take the OC and package them together.
Because as the OC, then he can work more closely with the quarterback. If he's the head coach,
right,
he's not going to be spending all of his time with the quarterback. And you're looking, unless you're Sean McVay, I should say, because he probably has a lot to do with that success over there. But I largely agree with you. And I think it's interesting, like I said, because all these guys are younger and they're more pliable and they're more. I think Robinson, with a younger guy, he's going to be able to more impose his will on them. as saying, hey, this is what I want. This is what I need to see from you, as opposed to a, you know, look, Bruce Arians comes in as the head coach. John Robinson's not going to be able to tell him how to do his job, okay? I mean, Arians is going to know what he wants to do, and it's either you take it or you leave it. Where these guys may come in and say, okay, I can work with this. This is where you want to go. We'll go there together.
Well, we were going to, and I want to throw Frank Reich in there. The way it is described in Philadelphia, and when you read about it, John DeFilippo is charged with managing Carson Wentz and developing Carson Wentz. Doug Peterson calls the plays. So if the three guys, Frank Reich is the OC, if the three guys are there, it feels like the guy having the least influence on the Philadelphia Eagles offense is Frank Reich. Why was he just not coaching for a long time? Like, there's just, to me, Frank Reich is not an answer here. That to me is a guy that I'm not interested in as a guy to come in and be a head coach. Maybe OC, but not interested in my opinion, to be the head coach.
Well, I mean, and he's a guy who's been kind of out there for a while, and an offensive guy. And I guess he was asked about it, and he slammed the door on it. You know, like with all these guys who are assistants, you don't find out until you find out. And
right.
You know, maybe. Right. Maybe he is, but I totally agree with where you're going. If one guy's got the quarterback and the other guy's got the offense,
what's his job?
What would you say? What would you say you do here?
I like that. We got a packed show today. John Kincaid, love talking to that guy. Coming up next hour, going to get to know Matt LaFleur a little bit as he was around him with the Falcons. Darren Gant going to join us from Pro Football Talk, talk a little Steve Wilks, and get to know him a little bit. So we'll continue to get to know these candidates that you need to know about here as a Titans fan as we continue to roll along here on the morning show. ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Braden Gall, Corey Curtis here on a Wednesday. Stay safe out there. Nashville, drive slowly. Drive slowly and stay warm. Darren Gant joining us here from Pro Football Talk, talking all things NFL here. And obviously, as we're getting to know all these coaching candidates from around the league, I wanted to talk with Darren here about a couple of different guys. And first and foremost, Darren, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. We're trying to survive our own snowpocalypse here in Charlotte. So pray for Charlotte.
No, well, you guys get whatever we have like 10 or 12 hours later, right? So we're at about 5 degrees right now, so be ready for that.
Awesome. Can't wait.
So you're in Charlotte, and that's part of why we wanted to talk to you is about Steve Wilks, who's going to be interviewing with the Tennessee Titans among a number of other candidates. Just sort of break down who he is, what he is, and what he brings to the table as a defensive coordinator.
Well, I think Steve is still very young in his progression as a coach, but all the signs are there. I mean, this guy is going to be a head coach in the NFL at some point. I think it's just a matter of the timing. In many ways, he's a lot like Ron Rivera. And Ron was a guy who had to wait, you know, probably too long for his term as a head coach based on what he's done once he's gotten that job. And, you know, a lot of it's just timing and situation. But Steve is just one of those guys. He's got that natural leadership about him. He exudes, you know, Army general. He exudes CEO, you know, all that stuff you want your head coach to be. Steve Wilks has it. He just has a natural bearing. I think he's still, you know, kind of learning on the job and getting his legs underneath him as a coordinator. This was his first year doing it, and he was following a guy in Sean McDermott who had done it at a pretty high level. And Steve took a defense that was different in construction and played it differently. You know, they were a lot more of a blitz-heavy defense this year than they had been in the past under Sean. And traditionally, Ron Rivera and defensive guys like him would have preferred to have just gotten all their pass rush from their front four. But personnel-wise, they weren't built that way. So Steve shuffled the deck a little bit. And, you know, Carolina was a playoff team because of it. They played really well this year. And I think, you know, he had a lot to do with that. Again, he's young. He's, you know, first year as a coordinator, and this is his first round through the interview cycle, so I don't know. I know Rivera was resigned, and in talking to people around the building, they're sort of making contingency plans on what to do without him. They might trip and fall into keeping him if he doesn't end up in Arizona or Tennessee because everything else is dried up around him.
Well, that was what I was going to ask about, was Arizona. They're reportedly getting ready for round two of interviews.
Right.
Supposedly Mike Munchak is going to get a second interview. Have you heard, is Steve Wilks on that interview list? And Braden talked about it some. What are his attachments offensively? Because that's going to be very important in what gets sold here in Nashville.
Well, he's an Andy Reid tree guy. So the name that's come up is John DeFilippo, you know, who's going to be a candidate in his own right. But there's been some talk of a link between those two guys. And I think, you know, since a quarter of the league's Andy Reid guys, it seems, that's a pretty good place to start. I think he's going to, one of the things young coaches, and especially young coaches, I think it's going to be a struggle for both Arizona and Tennessee, is getting staffs lined up, because that's so important. And if you bring in a first-time guy, I think it's going to be a little tricky, because, you know, a lot of those chairs are already filled around the league. And, you know, even though you've got teams making a mockery of this rule of you can't deal with coaches still in the playoffs, you know, three jobs are basically filled with guys that we know so far. So I think being last in that order is going to make it a little tougher. And those jobs are typically, you know, a little bit transient. I mean, when you get guys in, they usually have an initial staff, and it's a couple years till they can get the guys they really want sometimes. And that puts first-time coaches in a tough position, especially if they come at it a little late.
Darren Gant joining us here from Pro Football Talk. How do you view the Tennessee Titans roster and the situation and the job as a whole? We know stable ownership and certainly a powerful GM at this point, but I think there seems to be some divided opinion on how good a roster this really is. Where do you fall on that?
I think it's pretty good. I don't think it's great. For a couple of years, the AFC South has always been a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a landfill, and whoever had a healthy quarterback was the one winning the division. So it's tricky, but I do think John Robinson's done a good job raising the overall level. I wouldn't, you know, go so far as to say it's one of the, you know, top five rosters in the NFL, but it's definitely, you know, top half, top third of the league. I think they've got a lot of good young parts, and they've built that thing in a way that lends itself to stability. I mean, they play good defense. They've got good young parts on the offensive line that you can build around, and those things don't go away as quickly as, or aren't necessarily as temporal as building around skill position guys sometimes. I think they've got some work to do, but Robinson's clearly done a good job since he's been there, and I do think if all things were equal, it would be an attractive job, because it's a place where, you know, you've seen Jacksonville come up. You can envision winning there. You can envision having success. I mean, Marcus Mariota is clearly a guy with a lot of talent that, you know, the right coach is going to be really intrigued with, and that's going to be part of his sales pitch, is what I'm going to do with Marcus. So, you know, I think it's an attractive job. You know, having lived in Charlotte all my life and know how those kind of impressions gather, people are going to undersell it because it's not a big market, because it doesn't get a lot of attention. But I think, you know, within the football community, it's certainly viewed as a good roster and a good collection of talent, a good place to start.
Now, another important aspect of this job is fit. We've gotten to know Amy Adams Strunk and John Robinson over the last 2 years, and there's a certain style and personality that's going to work with those guys. You know, Jim Harbaugh, and Braden and I both believe, you know, Josh McDaniels, not necessarily a personality match for those guys. What's the personality of a Steve Wilks and how he would work with a GM or an owner?
Well, and again, I will point you back to Ron Rivera. I mean, Ron is not a big personality guy. He's not jumping around, storming all over the place, making a bunch of demands on the field or internally. And I think Steve's kind of learned a lot of that management style from him. It's also, I would be remiss not to point out that Steve Wilks, like myself, comes from the greatest football factory in the American college system, Appalachian State University. You know, we crank out leaders at ASU. I like to tease my friends from Arizona State as being from the other ASU, but Steve came up the right way. He's an impressive guy. I mean, I think Ron's style has been so low key, and part of that is, you know, the lessons he's learned from Andy Reid. He's got, you know, he understands the value of getting along with your front office, you know, everybody being on the same page, that kind of thing. And I think it's easier to, you know, it's easier to find guys like that when you're looking among first-time head coaches, because you mentioned Harbaugh. I mean, that guy's set in his ways. He's going to be able to come in because he's got background, and he's going to be able to say, hey, I've got to have X, Y, Z, you know, and be able to make demands, and not everybody's going to want to go that route. But Steve's, I think Steve has learned because of the way they built the department in Carolina, whether it was Marty Herney, Dave Gettleman, Marty Herney again, those guys have always had a pretty tight bond with coaches. And so from that standpoint, I wouldn't imagine it being any problem, him coming in and working with John Robinson. I do. I just think, you know, this sounds like a little bit of a sales pitch, but Steve is a super impressive guy, and he's just one of those guys, when you walk in a room with him, you can look at him and say, that guy's a leader. Whether he gets a head coaching job or not, he's a leader, and I think he's going to be successful at some point in the NFL, whether it's his hiring cycle or not.
Darren, real quickly, is the Final Four this year in the NFL with these three defensive teams and sort of unknowns at quarterback versus the known superstar GOAT at quarterback, is this a one-off year that just sort of worked out this way, or is it a trend you expect to continue in the future?
Well, yeah, we're done with quarterbacks. They're not a big deal anymore. I don't think anybody's going to spend any draft currency trying to get them. They're certainly not going to be a land rush for guys who may not be ready to play. Yeah, of course, people are still going to be, you know, standing on the gas in that market, and you'll see people lose their minds in April with the draft. But I do think it speaks to, you know, and it sounds kind of dumb, but one of the things I've learned in the NFL, having covered it for 20-plus years, it's more than one way to skin a cat, and if you don't have a quarterback, you can't try to play the way you would if you've got a Tom Brady. So let's do other stuff. And I think, you know, Mike Mularkey was smart to play it the way he did. I mean, when Marcus was young and you weren't sure exactly what you had, you didn't know how much pressure you could put on him in those situations. Hey, let's play defense. Let's run the ball. Let's be basic. Let's spend draft currency on linemen. And I think that's why Tennessee is a pretty good job for somebody to walk into, because they do have that stable base. And, you know, obviously Marcus has got talent, and the Titans aren't going to be in that market. But I do think, you know, people are going to continue to overspend and overthink that quarterback situation. But it's possible in the NFL to do business a different way. And that's one of the cool things about it. I love watching the Jaguars this year because it's practically quarterback-less football. You know, let's win without one, 21-22, and let's get it on. And it's fun. It's old school, and I like it.
I watched the Chicago Bears my whole life. That's not fun.
Darren.
Well, it depends. I mean, if you've got the great defense and running game, it can be, you can build a personality around that. And, you know, I know a lot of coaches take a lot of pride in games they won. And John Fox was here for 9 years and was up in Chicago recently. If I had a dollar for every time John Fox said, I've won a lot of games with quarterbacks no better than Jake Delhomme. You know, I mean, coaches get into that kind of stuff because it allows them to be coachy.
Darren Gant, Pro Football Talk, always a pleasure, man. Thank you for giving us some insight. We really do appreciate it.
You got it, fellas.
Absolutely. Darren Gant there. A lot of insight into who Steve Wilks is. Sounds a lot like Mike Vrabel, and both these guys.
And Mike Tomlin.
Big-time leaders when it comes to sort of commanding a room and being a presence. So there's one thing I do want to address about that. We'll obviously have a big game with the Preds last night as well, but I do want to address one final point about the defensive side of the ball and those options for the Tennessee Titans before we get back into the Preds. Also, Rick Byrd going to join us coming up top of the hour, so we got a lot of stuff to do here on The Morning Show. ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to 102.5 live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Got to know Steve Wilks there, the defensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers, from Darren Gant. We're going to get to know Matt LaFleur, the offensive coordinator for the Rams, who was in Atlanta for the last season or two under Matt Ryan. John Kincaid going to join us, and it's an excuse to talk with John Kincaid, who's one of our favorites. He's going to join us coming up next hour. Rick Byrd going to join us top of the hour. Preds win 1-0. I'm going to get to that in just a second. But I do want to get your thoughts on this, Corey, because we haven't had a chance to talk. Corey Curtis.
And I'm a genius.
Braden Gall, and you are a man, the myth, the legend. I don't want fans, and I think Darren kind of joked about it just there. I think fans are very easy. And I heard Floyd Reese doing this yesterday, and I love you, Floyd Reese, but you're guilty of this. You can't look at 1 year's Final Four in the NFL and try to take away some massive change and trend of the NFL. It's a 1 year thing. If 3 or 4 years from now we've had three or four consecutive seasons of nothing but defensive teams with bad quarterbacks,
yeah,
then maybe we can look at a trend.
Trent Dilfer was an anomaly.
This is a one-year thing. It doesn't mean that the defense doesn't pop up every now and then and win a Super Bowl. The Giants in 2007. They also happen to have Eli Manning playing quarterback that year as well. But their defense won them that Super Bowl. You mentioned Trent Dilfer and the Ravens. This is the once every 6 to 8 to 10 years type of deal.
Yeah.
Don't think that what happened in the NFL playoffs this year is the new rule.
It's not built for sustained Super Bowl success. It can get you to the party, and if things fall right, you can get there. Whereas if you've got Aaron Rodgers, if you've got Drew Brees, if you've got Tom Brady, you're going to be there.
Yep.
You're going to be. And so it's
still, this year's the anomaly to have three guys that aren't really franchise quarterbacks and Tom Brady.
And I was stunned, and the Eagles can take offense to everything they want. I don't care. I was stunned that
the wonderful people of Philadelphia.
Well, no, I mean, I thought the Falcons.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, they showed me something in LA, and I can't believe they didn't win that football game.
Very impressed with the job that the running game and the defense did for Philadelphia in that game against Atlanta.
And they're not going to win this weekend.
Just want to point that out, that if Steve Wilks and or Mike Vrabel, to sort of pivot this back to the Titans coaching search, if they do go defense, it needs to be a guy who's a clear-cut guy that can lead and inspire action, and then they also need to have a very clear-cut offensive game plan in place, whether that's a guy that they already have ready to go or a scheme or whatever. If you're going to bring in Vrabel or Wilks, who seem like very similar people right now in this situation, they better be bringing somebody very, very good with them on the offensive side of the ball. There's no question about that. Last night, the Predators get a win 1-0 over the Vegas Golden Knights to sort of kickstart what I'm going to call the second half of the season, and are now 1 point behind Winnipeg in the standings. They beat the best team in the Western Conference. UC Saros was absolutely filthy last night. Victor Arvidsson did get placed on IR yesterday afternoon.
In the NHL, that's not that big of a deal.
No, it's retroactive to the previous game, which means he, you know, at least will miss at least two more games, but could be back after that. He did practice yesterday morning and appeared like he was trying to give it a go, which means, I'm assuming that means he's close. Philip Forsberg is still about 2 to 3 weeks away from coming back, so any report you read, you can feel good about it. That's great, but we're still at least 2 to 3 weeks away from him coming back. The big news from last night, though, aside from UC Saros playing great and Kevin Fiala scoring a big goal, was Ryan Johansson being knocked out of the game near the end of the second period.
And when you say knocked out, you mean knocked out.
Yes, like Debo style, from Friday style. I mean, that he like eyes closed when he hit the ice. Mm-hmm. Really scary looking hit, and did not come back. Certainly looked like he was shaking the cobwebs loose. And all of Jofa not there for the third period last night.
Lavi. Little upset after that one.
Yeah, Lavi is not allowed, by the way, to come out and say, like, upper body injury, because he's actually screaming at the refs. He hit him in the bleeping head. Yeah, he actually was saying that. So it's very clear that it was a head injury, which is really scary
Ryan Johansson. And it was really clear he hit him in the head.
Yes.
I mean, that's what makes, you know, and listen, if they call a penalty and everything, who cares if you're Vegas? You just knocked this guy out of the game. It's still a win for you. And that's why I always say with these head injuries, you know, and blows to the head, you just got to say as long as that guy's out, you're out. And it's going to cost you game checks. I mean, that's the only way you're going to get those headshots out of these games is to take money out of people's pockets.
And what's scary about the NHL is there's no protection beneath the helmet, like the NFL, the NFL, where you have all kinds of protection, because the jaw is actually, obviously the back of the head when you fall to the ice or hit the boards, or when an NFL player, like the Alvin Kamara touchdown catch, by the way, against Minnesota, it was very clear that he got hit when his head snapped back and hit the back of the end zone. The back of your head and then your jaw is where you really get a lot of those injuries, and that's where Ryan Johansson got it yesterday. It was a shoulder right to the jaw.
Dr. Phil Wink is the head of Delta Dental here in Middle Tennessee, and one of the things he's talked a lot about is the importance of mouth guards and the connection of blows to the jaw with concussions. So you're absolutely right. It's one of those things I've learned that I didn't know. I agree with you, but the snap back onto the field, the head on the back onto the field is the biggest thing that I see.
Tom Savage here in Nashville, for example.
The ear hole shot, but that ear hole shot is kind of along the lines of that jaw shot. That punishes your brain.
And it was scary because the stick goes flying, the hands are flailing in the air, the limbs go limp, and his eyes are closed when he hits the ice. It's scary scary stuff. So I'm assuming whatever those protocols are for either the NHL or the Predators, that that's what's taking place. And, of course, we'll have any news for you as it breaks. But a scary moment there. And even bigger to get 2 points without your top three players on offense.
Pretty amazing.
The Jofa line not involved at all last night in the third period. And I'm guessing won't be involved for a couple more games. So
yeah.
Good news is you get Arizona and Florida. And you should be able to play well against those two teams without your best players. Just unfortunate to see that happen, and very, very scary for Predators fans and for Ryan Johansson and everybody. Just a scary moment.
It's
now,
the Stanley Cup Finals all over again. Yeah, got to win without your best players.
Yeah, so got to win a couple games here. And then Tampa, you could have Arvidsson and Johansson in theory back for the Tampa game next Tuesday, which would be that seven-day concussion protocol sort of deal. And Arvidsson's IR, all that in theory. You could have everybody back next Tuesday. We'll see if that happens. When we come back, Corey Curtis, Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll continue to talk Titans, but Rick Bird going to join us, the head coach of your Belmont Bruins, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.